today, we had a special concession which was requested on the request of South African Rugby Union. The reason that they thought that they might be on their way back home. And so we agreed that we are going to meet at 12. So, welcome, and thanks for responding, President, with your delegation. Before we do anything, let us start by introducing ourselves. We have not been talking to each other for some time, and we see there are new faces. So it will be proper for Deputy President to introduce his delegation, and after that members will introduce themselves, and from there we hit the ground running. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Acting Chairperson. On my right-hand side of the Springbok coach, Peter de Villiers. Right next to me is the CEO, Yuri Roo. Next to him is our Head of Communications, Andy Cohen. And right next to him we have Nula, Edo Nula, who is a consultant to South African Rugby. And I am Mark Alexander, the Deputy President of SA Rugby.
Thank you, Deputy President. Can we start with the Members of Parliament, Honourable Father Linder? Come up from there, and then.
Father Linder, I'm part of the committee. I'm from the Western Cape VA. Ex-Cape player.
Thank you. Chairperson, I'm Litho Suka, member of the committee, ANC.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My name is Pat Libenyandanzi, a member of this committee representing IFP.
Thank you, Honourable Acting Chair. I'm Grace Seke, the member of the Portfolio Committee representing the African National Congress.
Thank you, Acting Chair. My name is Khai. I'm from the Northwest, representing the ANC. Thank you, Chairperson.
Graham McKenzie, member of this committee from KZN, the home of the Currie Cup champions. Thank you.
Thank you. Donald, we are waiting on you. So important. We almost did not start, but we were forced to start in our absence. So can you get seated and introduce yourself, please, as a leader?
Chairperson, as a good leader, I was looking for something, and because that's what leaders should do, they should look for things. The name is Donald Lee. I'm a member of parliament, DA member of parliament. Thanks.
Thank you. Can we just get to know our visitors there at the back, starting with you, Honourable Sir? Sweet and short.
Thank you, Acting Chair. My name is Godfrey Mutamola. I'm a student at UNISA, law student. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Chair. My name is Marcus Kwame. I'm a PMG intern.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mike Cohen. I'm a journalist with Bloomberg News.
Thank you.
My name is Mavam from Parliamentary Communication Services.
Thank you.
I'm Manelis Dubas. I'm a journalist with the SABC.
Thank you.
I'm Zaline Wellington, a journalist with SABC.
Thanks.
Peter De Toy, a journalist with BILD.
Thanks. Liesl Steenkamp, journalist with BILD.
Thank you. And next to me is Mr. Pori. He is the secretary of the committee, but in certain circles outside is known as the CEO. I don't know. We've invited South African Rugby to come and give us a briefing One, the preparations for the World Cup. Two, these Five Nations. We seen that they went to play abroad. Three, the Eastern Cape franchise. Four, the issue which many people don't want to talk about, and that is transformation. That is how short the agenda is going to be. I must also say that one have noticed in the few matches which have been played in the Currie Cup is really not good what is seen there. But we'll wait and hear from you gentlemen. And I'm not sorry, you are gentlemen. I like the Drakensberg choir. There's no ladies among you. Thank you. Over to you.
Sorry, Chairperson. I noticed that you've got a transformation on the agenda. We had two items on our agenda. We have a committee that deals with that. So we would have prepared a document around that. Unfortunately, they're not here, so... If it's okay with you, we can request that they can come and present that document to you in line with the transformation initiative of SARO.
I understand what you're saying, Deputy President, but there are some pending issues which, whether you want to call them transformation, which we have to discuss. And if we need to call that committee, we will call them. But there are definitely burning issues which we can't not discuss today. Thank you.
Person, I will start with the Springboks preparation. And I think I'm going to hand over to Mr. Peter de Villiers to take us through that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have prepared a small presentation for you so that you can see and understand where we are at this moment. To us, it's a very important tournament. We're preparing the team to do the country proud again. And there's no stone unturned on the way to the World Cup. So... I will deal with the following: the job at hand, our strategy, success factors, our tools, selection policies, and our way forward. Okay, our goal is that what is going to happen, where is it happening, when, and who is involved. So everybody part of our plans. Everybody in our team that's playing personnel and supporting staff, all of them are upskilled with the what, the where, the when, and whose job, and who will take responsibility for those things. So what we decided, there must be one single-minded message going through the whole country. Everybody must know that what we want to achieve, how we're going to achieve it, and the little role players that we need to achieve this goal. We actually had one slogan down there, and in Afrikaans is "Bring ons kopie," is bring back the trophy. That's our slogan for the World Cup. Our focus and direction is that we don't want to talk. People around us. For instance, if we go to New Zealand or talk about our opponents, we're going to look for the one area where they, to us, is very ordinary. Like if we talk about the All Blacks, we're actually in awe of them. If we talk about New Zealand, it's just another country that we play against, so that our preparation should be not for teams, but for matches. We want to bring across the whole world the same message. The media must we want the buying of the media to give the message to the rest of the world. For us, this country is so important. We know that we can, through our game and our sport, bring hope for this country. Let everybody understand our playing style and our two role plays is very, very important, is through SARU and through our government, that the message should go out there. The opportunities that arises throughout all these things is we want to use everything for the good of our team. So when whatever is out there, we want to see it as opportunity, and we want to see how we can use an opportunity so that the team can flourish and the team can benefit from it. Now, end results would be everybody knows, nobody guesses. Within the team and without the team, nobody guesses what's going to happen. Everybody understands our goal. Everybody understands where we want to be, and everybody buy in to what we and where we want to be. The achievement of those, the thing that we want to get our goals and that we set for ourselves, it should be through participation. Participation for the team, so we sit down and everybody makes an input, and at the end we take ownership of the responsibilities that is so important to take this country to the next level. Everything that we do should be measurable. Whatever, wherever, we don't have one single role player not included. We want to measure our performance on the field. We want to measure the individual input. We want to measure referees. We want to measure media. We want to measure everything that we do. Then our strategy, we worked out like everybody has a SWOT analysis, and everything internal, everything that we can handle and we can within our power is the strengths and weaknesses that is within our power, and then our opportunities and threats is external. So we sit down and look at our strengths. One of the strengths that we do have going to this World Cup is the wealth of experience that we do have with the players that were there and the players that played 4 years now for us. We do have the talent to be the best in the world, and the whole world respect quite a few of our guys at this moment. Within the team, we've got honesty and openness amongst the players. Our faith is a strong strength of us. And then our support structures. And when we talk about our support structures, we talk about our home union. They support us quite well. And then we really can't sit back and say that we didn't have anything or had anything in our way up till now. Our weaknesses can be the form of the players. We all know that form is temporary. Class is actually the thing that we look for. But form can actually be a weakness for us. The unity that we spoke about earlier in here amongst our unions, where everybody have to perform. Everybody's got a performance clause in their contracts. It sometimes kills the unity. The one thing that we know, what we really need at this moment, is a killer instinct. Our guys are really happy with where they are. They don't when they got somebody on the floor, they don't go for the killer blow. There's a big fear for risk. The guys don't want to stand out as somebody who made mistakes. They all just want to be the good boys, so there's a fear for risk. And then ourselves, I mean, the fact that we know we've got talent, we can be a weakness. It can be a weakness for us going forward. And as I said earlier, the franchises too, with their performance clauses and playing the players every week, could become a weakness for us. Opportunities, we had three camps. We had consultants that we brought in. Our Three Nations competition at the moment, we see it as opportunity for us. The media is a great opportunity to get the real message out there to the world, that we are a country that Our beliefs are strong, and we can be the best in the world. Government is for us an opportunity, because if the government is behind us, then when we leave the show, we know that all the blessings go with us. And then I think that one of the biggest opportunities we do have is our supporters, people who really want to rally behind the team and go out there and buy the jerseys and be green. Some of the threats that we see at the moment is that to be the best, we have to go win 7 games. To play New Zealand in New Zealand, we see as a threat. We see the home unions as a threat because they have all their games been played. Like their last games would be in March of this year, so they could be nice and fresh. The international media will be a threat, picking up from things that we do say in this country about certain players can be a threat for us. And then the overexpose of most of our players, that can become a threat for us. Our crucial success factors at the moment is these factors for us is born from our threats. So we're working at it. We want to, and we will have to win 7 games in a row if we want to be the best in the world. We're looking at fresh and revitalized players who can go there and go play the 7 games and can be game after game at their best so that we can bring back the honors for our country. The players and everybody in our management must be focused. At this moment, we really are. And then all of us must be goal-orientated and then must be the same goal. We want the relaxed players. Players who will go to the World Cup without monkeys on their backs and without the pressure of being right down in our media. But we want the pressure that we need to go do good for our country, that we can bring the hope out there, and that we can build a nation. We understand the country's demands, and to us it's the right demands. We know that we do have the tools to actually, as I said, to unite our country to the best of our ability. And then the last one is the periodization of our players so that when we reach the World Cup, that we can rely on peak performances from our players. Our tools at the moment, we've got a good coaching and technical staff. The guys understand the game, the guys work very, very hard. The guys do have that measurements and measuring tools in place where every player has been measured after every practice, every player has been measured after every game. And we can give them accurate feedback on their performances on the day. We can give them accurate feedback on their practice sessions. And we can give them accurate feedback on the state that they are in before the game and after the game. We've got, I think, one of the best logistics managers in the business. A guy who helps us to take the pressure off the players, especially when it comes to travel. He's really, really very, very good. All our logistics ducks is in a row, and even everybody knows it's going to happen at the World Cup every day of it and every minute of it. Our conditioning strategies, there we've got a small problem because we rely on the fact that the players have been conditioned by the franchises, and if you look at the two outposts, North and South, you know, the Blue Bulls condition a bit different because of their playing style than what the Stormers will do. And those are the two teams that will make up the bulk of the team. So there we a bit worried that all of them won't be on the same level. But we worked very, very hard on that, and the gap has been narrowed. We've got a very, very good medical team. I think our stronghold at this moment is our medicals. We go through each and every player. They understand where they are. We know our rehabilitation protocols in place, physio protocols in place. We got all those kind of things that our reps and everything guys do really understand what it's all about. Our medical team is not there at the moment to react when there's guys been injured. They're actually working very, very hard to get them fresh and keep them fresh to be on the field. Our public relations, I think it worked very good. Everybody understands where we are. We did actually great in this 4 years, and especially build our build up to the World Cup now, where we turned the team that were actually wrapped in cotton wool, we turned into a team for the public. We opened to the public. We stopped and we give signatures wherever we get. And then there's something on our way out that we're going to play a big role to say goodbye to the people too. Our media has definitely come a long way. For the first time in 2 years, we've got somebody who's really interested in the job, who knows how significant it is to sit and work and get a relationship with the media going. There we made a more than 200% stride in moving forward. Getting an equipment, I think we're all proud of our kit, and we got some of the best equipment around, so the players do feel worthy of being there, and the players do understand what their role will be to take us further. Our team selection, what we strive is for consistency, that people understand each other, that they can carry out that goal and know where they stand and the feeling for each other. We go for experience most of the times, and we go for great leadership that we do have and blessed to have. Form versus class, as I said, that class is form is actually temporary, class is forever. So we're looking for the classing players, that they can be world beaters and world players. And then our team dynamics is sometimes things that people try to understand or they don't try to understand in our team. There's a team dynamic there that is very important so that we can achieve our goals. Guys that stand out not to fall in line is the guys that we try to get rid of so that the country can become first, and the country is the only thing that we are there for. Our contracting is sound, and our remuneration is sound. We know whatever we're going to get. The players do know that. It's in place. Nobody has to guess when they go to the World Cup. Money will never become a burning point or a discussion point at World Cup time. All these things have been buried with the help of our CEO and Saru. They've put all the stuff in place, so that's great. And then, as I said, our process is a great one, where we sit down with our two selectors and we first look at what we do want, the requirements for the job, before we look at people to do the job. So there's no sentimental selections made up till now, and I'm very proud of that. The way forward, we see it, is at this moment, where we see our rugby going forward, is to have one database of players from Craven Week so that we understand where they get off the bus and where we can go look for them again. We want their medical record, work on it, know if we pull a record and he plays with us for the Stormers or for the Sharks. After 5 years, we know he had a knee injury or a shoulder injury, and we want to work upon that so that we can actually have our players longer around. We want to have a database on the skill base. We want to have a database on their strengths and their weaknesses and how to get them better so that they can actually be an asset for our country. And then our conditioning is very important at this moment. I think that is one of the most important parts of our professional sport, to get them conditioned to go do the job that we expect of them. And again, we want to see how strong they are and what they need and what their weaknesses are and what we have to work on. What we think we need to being the sport leaders in this country, I suppose, looking on to what the sport minister said, I think we had to look at one sport base in South Africa, like a sport village, and I think Saru can take the lead there, so that we can actually bring across all our expertise and experience to the rest of our sporting coach. The best sport coordination that we can get, so in any aspect of the game, it must be very holistic. So sports psychology, conditioning, medical, all those kind of things, bring it up to speed and take it from there. Our talent identification program and our support systems is very important. I think that is what we're going to talk more about in all our other areas of that we don't miss. We spread our net so wide, we don't miss talent in this country. But the big thing is the support systems. The four support systems within his background, not taking guys out of his environment, but leaving there so that they can be role models for the players and the children and their mates around them. And then the close working relationship amongst federations. We see that and we try. We started it back then, and we got a long way already in meeting all the federations and all their coaches and trying to get one thing going so that we can draw from their experience. Yeah, that's it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Coach. Ladies and gentlemen, members, there is it. Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Musi, Honorable Donald, Honorable McGlua, we'll stop there. There's another round. Don't panic.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to say that I'm speaking in my political role and not in any capacity associated back in KZN with either KZN or you or the Sharks. I just want to say that to the coach that what really bothers me and bothers a lot of us here is the fact that there's a very strong feeling amongst the public that this team that went to the Tri Nations has in fact weakened the badge of the Springbok. There are former Springboks that I've spoken to who are absolutely horrified at the results and the way we've played, the fact that we've played a weakened side. And I don't think it's brought any glory to us in this crucial time leading up to trying to retain the championship. Further, I'd like to say that it's a very dangerous thing to ostracize or forget about the public out there who are supporting the Springboks. And I can tell you the depths of despair on Saturday morning, you have no idea how bad it was. And this criticism is not born at the players. The players are the ones who are selected. I'm not suggesting that. But I would say that if you're going to represent this country, you've got to put the best side in the park. You know, we hear about stories about resting players and so on and so forth, and we've got a camp in Rustenburg of 21. But let me just say a few things. With the new rules in rugby, clearly the playing style that we've enjoyed in the past, which is a kicking game, is not suitable anymore. And yet we go to the overseas tour at the end of last year, and we played a very, very conservative kicking game. Now, I'm not here to tell the coach what style to play, but I've seen the teams that have beaten us last year against our A side, 5 out of 6 games in the Tri-Nations. So the team that stayed behind, that's been rested, lost 5 out of 6 and 2-10 in the Tri-Nations. So what's happened now is that the pressure on the two home legs of this Tri-Nations in 2-11 is absolutely enormous on those two and their two home games. And I'm very fearful that going into the World Cup, if we don't win those and get some momentum, we might have a serious problem. Secondly, Murray Mexteter, the All Blacks, former All Black player, has said openly that South Africa has the physicality and the players, but they don't have any skills. They have skills, but very limited compared to some of the other unions. And clearly on Saturday, there were two glaring examples with the Springboks on going forward, and two players made absolutely shocking decisions technically, which the other team doesn't do. So I think there's a shortage in the upskill department there. Further, everyone says this is a young team, and yet there's a centre who was selected who is 30 years old. We have a number 8 who was selected was almost 30 years old. and two centres who don't even start for their Super 15 sides started against probably the three best centres in world rugby today. And is this not just a case of leading the lambs to slaughter? I mean, guys, I'm a rugby man through and through, and this committee knows that. And I'm probably sport first and politics second. Well, I know I am. And it hurts me to say some of these things, but this is the feeling on the ground. And it's very, very troubling. And, you know, I just don't know when you're ever going to get any momentum going in there, because it worries me that there are some glaring problems in selection and skills, the fact that we don't have any form. I mean, last year we lost 5 out of 6 against the two nations that are ranked ahead of us. What have we done to bridge that gap? I don't know. So before we go on to the other issues, I just want to leave that with you. I appreciate the hard work that has been done, and I see that there's a lot of professionalism. And I just want to say as well, this is the criticism, but on the other side of the coin, that of course we're behind the Springboks and we want them to bring the trophy back. And I just hope that my assessment is wrong, but I'm fearful for the management and the directors of South African Rugby, that if we don't win it, there's going to be a lot of questions asked. And guys, this is a professional era, and you're in a pressure environment. And South Africa is known for their rugby, and they want winners. But so there it is. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Muse.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chairperson. I can bear testimony to Honorable McKenzie that. I'm trying to, Chairperson. Now I'm saying I can bear testimony to this House that Honorable McKenzie is sport first and politics later on. Hence, I had some few questions that I wanted to pose to this House, and then has like preempted them. I actually wanted to speak about playing style, but has done it. Now, Chairperson, I actually wanted for the coach to sort of clear the myth, you know, whether it's a myth or those conflicting statements that we heard some weeks back about the Rustenburg camp. Surely the coach would be able to clarify us on that one. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about is to check with the coach as to how far, you know, they've gone on taking this issue of fear of risk taking. Obviously, it is something that they have identified together with the technical staff. What have they done thus far, you know, to try to curb it? And then, coach, lastly, I actually wanted to locate ourselves from, you know, from your short analysis under opportunities. I could not find ourselves anywhere as a committee, whether we are under the government as people who are giving you support or under supporters. Tell us, where are we? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Saru, for what you are doing for rugby. The philosophy of my party is not to pick teams. We are not, you know, we are interested in rugby. We are interested in sport. But we don't really want to run sport in this country. It must be run by you people. But you must run it in the sense of South Africa first. You know, that is what we are about. Now, coming back to a few things you said, Mr. Coach Peter. And I want to touch on, first of all, I want to concur with everything that was said by the Honorable Kennedy. Well, I know sport, he knows rugby. So I concur what he says about, what he said about the sentiments of the team, the sentiments of our country, all those things. And he is very, very interested in for our country to do well. You said something about fear for risk. Now, I know why people fear for risk. Because I want to be in the team. finally make a mistake, then I'm out of the World Cup team. That is what it's all about. And you know, we should find a way of telling people, man, listen, enjoy yourself. You understand? Enjoy yourself and become confident. Because if you are confident, you won't make mistakes. And with winning comes confidence. You understand? With that comes momentum. Because we want momentum as we go into this World Cup. And if we keep on losing, we will lose momentum. We will lose confidence. You understand? So it goes sort of hand in glove, all these things. So a lot of people said, and it was especially in the New Zealand media and Australians, the Australians too, that, you know, we didn't pick our best team, that we left our best players behind because we didn't see this sort of as the important objective for this year. The important objective was to win the World Cup. Really, I want to know, and with that also comes credibility. If I say something, a person must believe me. Whether it's my supporters, my whatever, you know, people must believe me. So it is a pity that it seems that though people don't believe the fact that you didn't take your best team overseas, that you left your best and experienced players behind so that they could be fit and ready for the World Cup. So I wonder, perhaps you can perhaps touch on that. The other important thing is that you said you'll pick, to you the more important thing is class. It is more important to have class than to have form. Now sometimes you have a classy player who is out of form, and we still tend to pick those classy players. You know, it depends, to me it will be who is in the best form on this day. Because that is the person that will sort of pull us through. So, although I concur with you, you know, you can't buy class. That's the thing, you can't buy it. But to include classy players at the expense of players that's in form, and those classy players are not in form, you know, that is to me sort of it leaves a question mark. Chairperson, about conditioning, I think we should have a uniform structure to measure or to condition our players. There shouldn't be a Western Cape conditioning sort of strategy and a Bulls conditioning strategy. There should really be one in the interest of South African rugby. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mabloo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to thank the coach for the presentation, and from my side I can only wish him well for the preparations. We stand behind you and the players. I think my dress code for the day says it all. Chairperson,
just to refresh you,
I would like the coach to elaborate more on the contracting and remuneration issue. I gather that it is guaranteed specifically when it comes to when they would like to go on strike. My question to the coach is, what provisions has been made should the players decide to go on strike? And I would like the answer to be aligned to the question or concern on the contracting and remuneration of the players. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let I join my colleagues by appreciating this presentation that was made by the coach and his delegation. I wish you also a good luck in your term of office as a coach. Chairperson, first and foremost, my observation will not be far from what the Honorable Member Mackenzie raised. You see, what I've observed, unfortunately, I was just an amateur rugby player, the Ruggerite, at Swallows Yudnik then. You see, today we are just playing a touching rugby rather than an attacking rugby. You know, as we witnessed that match during the weekend, our players, you know, they seem not to be attacking. They just touch as if they are playing this touch rugby and not attack. How can they send an ordinary forward pass through three players? They are just watching without attacking. You know, it's not on. I think there is a problem. It's either the body language was giving us a message to the country that they are not happy. You spoke about unity in your presentation, the form, the unity, and so on. So I am having my own observations. I will not go into the dialectics of Karl Marx that honorable member raised, the form and the class. You know, you are bordering towards the Marxism. But coming back to what the issue is at hand, I just want to understand from Saro, maybe the coach in particular, is he really aware that the agreement between South Africa, Australia and New Zealand to take up that competition, the Mandela Cup or the Bledsloe competition, how important it was that we perform, we usher out our good players and the dignity it deserves, that cup, so that we don't downplay that competition to an extent that it rubs perceptions that South Africa is not really serious. There were fundamental political decisions, reasons to have that agreement in place. The sons are relations. Surely, if you have that in mind, the political, economic, and sporting relations, surely we should not have been talking about this matter now if we ushered a good quality team. Well, surely those players, New Zealand, those two countries, they are aware of our good players in relation to the Super 15 or Super 14 and so on. And they know the potential that is there in South Africa. Hence, they themselves were questioning those players that we're having. So the question of the relations, we must always maintain that momentum as a country, not downplay those relations as a country. The second one, Chairperson, to our supporters, to the supporters, you know, what is good about rugby, they've got an organized supporters, not like any other team, and they paid a lot of money. Surely nobody would want to pay so much. I think the prices were around 300 to 600 rand per ticket. Now, to watch your team, not to lose, it's normal, but surely you must lose even your supporters when they feel that we have lost. At least they must be able to say we've lost with a good quality team, not having perceptions that this was not on, especially out of this that has happened over the last few weeks. My other issue, Chairperson, the issue of the players of color. You know, it is a concern. In his input, he was talking about tracking players. You know, I'm looking at these provinces that are playing. You see, I'm having a perception that the Western province, for instance, has got many players of color, especially the colors. You know, I'm just making an example about Western province. But if you place them towards the upward mobility to the national squads, there are very few. Either the wing or the scrum half or so, there are very few. That borders on the transformation that they said they did not bring that. But I don't want to talk transformation, rather I will speak of the content. Our colors, our players of color, moving upward the mobility, I don't think we are making strides in that regard. I'm just displaying Western Province as a test case. Those players who are very good, if you move them up the ladder, that's a perception to me, because I'm watching. Please correct that perception to say they are there. Because if you look at the players at the national squad, it does not translate into what we are talking about. Well, Chairperson, this issue of the communication, please, gentlemen, demystify the myth. Injured Rustenburg. What is the story? I think it has been raised here. I'm just saying the injuries down there, the Rustenburg camp, what is actually happening? We are at home now, and we must raise our confidence to support you. You want our support as the nation
But you must give us the true facts. Before I probe more, let I wait for answers. I will have some follow-up questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can we give all, Mr. Van der Linde?
Mr. Chair, a lot has been said. Mr. McKenzie touched on most of the things. To me, it's actually important that we do well in the next two games of the Tri Nations. We must start playing the team that's going to win the cup. So, for me, that's important to hide a player because of injury and so on doesn't help. Let him get hurt now and he's gone. Then you know he's not there. Don't put him in a blanket and then try him out when you get to New Zealand. The coach said he with his two selectors, there's no sentiment on players and so on. We've got the feeling, I've got the feeling that some players, although not on form, has got preference before others. And that's why I want to say, play your team and see if you can win the next two games. And that will be the team that will take us forward. The Talent ID program, to me, it sounds good. But if you look at Bulls, most of the top teams, they don't nurture their players from the bottom. They buy them. So players in their natural environment, it's not true in South Africa. Unfortunately, the smaller, Boland hasn't got money to keep their players. SWD hasn't got the money to keep their players. EP don't have the money to keep their players. So I mean that transformation of the Bulls, of Gauteng, of those people, it's not really, it's players who are bought. And that's, to me, one of the biggest problems in our rugby. So I think I'll wait for answers. But the main thing is we must see with the next two games that there's a pattern in a team. Well, we've played now a B team, as it said. The other B players were arrested and they trained in Rustenburg. I don't know. But we must see now what's the team going to look about in the next two games. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Before I give over to you, Chairman, you know, on Saturday, I was on my way from home to the doctor Saturday morning. In Cape Town. That was when the time South Africa was playing against New Zealand. There is a rugby field on the, as you pass the N1, there is a mall on your right hand side if you drive down. There was school rugby taking place there at that time. It was packed. It was packed. You could think that South Africa is playing All Blacks there. People decided to go and watch that school rugby instead of watching South Africa against All Blacks because of the past humiliation against Australia. So it's not that these members are lambasting you. These members are speaking on behalf of South Africans who has elected them. They interact with them. They go to bars with them. They go to weddings. They go to church. And they hear the sentiments of the people. And that is an outcry. You see, I just want to read you an SMS which I've received. And this is from Tark Transformation, this organization of Dr. Borat. At least others are now asking the same question we as ARC have been asking for the last 5 years. All white teams in 2011, possibly a prelude to what is coming for the Rugby World Cup. Sadly, the responses from SARU, the same, it's not us, it's the provinces. Yet they promised transformation would not be optional by now. Absolute nonsense. That is Bharat. Now this thing has been raised, Mr. Jury, that is before your time. And I've been saying that there is no way that the rugby of South Africa will ever move if provinces still have their own constitution and the mother body's got its own constitution. And the mother body can't ask the provinces, why are you behaving like that? Because they'll be told that it is out of your jurisdiction. Now, how can you in your house have laws for Pitt, and you've got another law for Macy, you've got another law for Gertie? Is there going to be discipline in that house? You are not going to have one. Until SARU decides to embark and have one constitution. Because even when it comes to these things of clubs, of provinces, you are going to say it's provinces. But what are you doing? What have you done all the years? Can you respond to this? Because we are still going to come to other issues. Really. Thank you.
Acting Chairperson, honourable members, we obviously accept all of your comments and the positive sense that you do mean them, and we do understand your position and the role that you have to take within this committee. And thank you for each and every one of those. I will address most of the administrative issues, because I would like to keep myself out of the both the playing style, the performance, etc. It's an easy cop-out for me as well, but please accept it in that light. I would like to start off to just get some background on teams' performance, especially teams' performance in New Zealand. Since 1996, we played in New Zealand 19 times. We've only won three times, once under Nick Mallett and twice under Peter de Villiers. We've lost 16 times there with the best possible teams that you can imagine. Two of those teams going on to win, one of those teams going on to win World Cup, others losing in quarterfinals and semifinals within the World Cup. Those were the best available players going to New Zealand, getting beaten by an average margin of 16 points. In only three of those games that we lost did we get within 7 points, scoring an extra bonus point. So I understand the emotion of losing against New Zealand, but also understand that New Zealand has only lost a number of times in their own country. That is their fortress, that's where they perform, and vigilantly so. So we just need to see that result in the perspective of a bigger statistic and of the performance of New Zealand as a team in their own country. We all want the Springboks to win all the time, but truthfully, we only win 64% of the time. So on 36% of the time, we actually do lose games. And we just need to see that in the greater scheme of things. Having said that, I understand that a lot of the emotion and a lot of the opinions of both the supporters, members, and all of the stakeholders currently are within the team that actually went down to New Zealand to participate. And there's a lot of rumors and myths that are running around, and I would like to address that as the next point. If I finish on the statistics, we are getting thrown numbers to us like I'm throwing numbers to you now, but we are being told we're playing a conservative game. But in our country and in our coach and in our professional team's ability, they look at our strengths and weaknesses, and they decide on which is the best route for that team to play, and they will always play to that. If they don't believe in that, they cannot participate on the playing field. So although we play a conservative game to certain people and certain individuals' opinion, we went to the England and Wales and Scotland at the end of last year and won three out of that four games by playing exactly that game. Yes, our results over the last 2 years in Tri-Nations are not that great, but our results in Tri-Nations has never been that great, and it's one of the challenges we face and something we need to change over time. We need to understand how to win abroad, and we need to get that winning mentality going. I understand momentum. I understand all of those issues. But according to our planning at this stage, we're en route to where we want to go. We never anticipated taking the amount of points we did against Australia and New Zealand. But sometimes, like in Australia, the team just doesn't pitch. Guys, this is professional sport. And ladies, excuse me. This is professional sport. And sometimes a team does not perform. Whether it's the best available team, I have no doubt about the fact that we did select the best available fit team. I've been on record in the New Zealand media, I've been on record in South African media, that was the best available fit team. And let me put it in perspective in terms of the Rustenburg. The reason, and first and foremost, the coach get quoted on the fact that he said there's no training camp on Rustenburg. He's exactly right. There was never a training camp. They asked him that. They never asked him whether there was any form of camp in Rustenburg, and that was the reason. He's a cunning man with words, and that was it. He was just trying to avoid New Zealand media in terms of what they were asking him. When they put the point up to for discussion, I was open and frank in my discussions with each and every one of those New Zealand media members and also the one or two Australian guys that were around. Yes, there were players in Rustenburg. It was a rehabilitation camp. I cannot emphasize the point enough that I have got a full medical record, which I showed to Sanzo, based on a medical certificate and evaluation that has taken place since November last year when we started the end of year tour on each and every one of these individuals. Yes, in a normal year, we probably would have pushed 5 or 6 players to go and play in the Tri-Nations. But it is not a normal year. If we push both John de Villiers and Jacques Fourie with their groin injuries, that was nearly pulled out of the semi-final, and that is on record at Sanzo as well, on the eve of the semi-final, both those players were nearly pulled out of the semi-final because of the groin injuries. If we push them in a Tri-Nations and they both get injured, while we can, in the meantime, rehabilitate them for 3 weeks and have them fresh and ready, known as the best pair, centre pair in world rugby at the moment, other than what everybody believes the two New Zealand guys are, we would be crucified as we are being crucified now. We are in a professional sport. We've got to act professionally. We are not ignoring our stakeholders. We are not denying our stakeholders. We are not ignoring the supporters or the previous Springboks or everybody that is out there. We are doing what is best for this team. And what is best for the team is that the people that are injured can be rehabilitated so that they are able and fit and ready for the World Cup. That has always been part of our planning. I cannot play Scott Burger. He's got a fractured finger. We could not play Andy Becker. There is out for the World Cup because he was played too much over the last 2 to 3 years. We need to manage the players. We've got a contractual obligation within the contract with the players to manage their welfare, to look after them. They are employees, and we need to do that. But we also need to do that in the best interest of South African rugby, in the best interest for all of these wonderful supporters and stakeholders that we do have. So the myth on Rustenburg. Rustenburg was a rehabilitation camp. Within a rehabilitation camp, just like the Australians, New Zealanders, England, Scotland, Wales, anybody else is doing, people are rehabilitating. When you rehabilitate, yes, you do run if you can run. If you've got a broken finger, surely you can't pick up weights, but you can run. If you've got a back injury, surely you cannot push in a scrum, but surely you can do some leg exercises that are not stressful on your back. And that's what we did there. Nothing more, nothing less. And I emphasize the point, yes. If you take the number of players that were there, yes, there was a few players that we could have pushed into the Tri-Nations. But that, from our side, would have been bad planning. In terms of what is coming up, it's the biggest competition in world rugby. It's the World Cup. And that's what we need to prepare for. And that has always been our goal. And we reckon we're en route in terms of that goal. On style of play is always a dangerous topic, and I will not go to that topic. That is a topic for the coach to address. But we've all got opinions on style of play, and it's always going to differ amongst members. On individuals saying whether we're skillful or not skillful, with all due respect to Mr. Murray Mixed, I respect the man, I respect his knowledge, but I can also bring you 50 other guys that will say we've got some of the most skillful players in the world, and that we've got different strengths than those players, and nobody's making a comment on that, but be that as it may. On the players itself, I don't think so, and I think Honourable Member McKenzie alluded to the fact no player will ever put on the jersey and go out there to underperform. That's true. It's not their fault. They get selected, but sometimes they do underperform, and we just got to accept that fact. On the unified structure, and I think I've addressed the medical issues and the Rustenburg issues, and both the style of play, etc. On the unified approach and the structured approach, it is true what the acting chairperson has said. It is one of the most difficult things to do, and it's very, very different from each and every union in the world, but there's one thing that is the same throughout the world. It's very difficult to set a singles play structure in place. It's very difficult to put a single conditioning program in place, because each and every coach, with all due respect, Peter, each and every coach believes he knows best. Each and every conditioning guy thinks he knows best. And so we go on with doctors and physios and everything else. It is our responsibility as Asia Rugby to put a framework there, to put the knowledge out there, and then see if we can align that in a unified process. And that has always been true, and I think it's true throughout the sport. I think where we can do better, and what we will do within the restructuring of Asia Rugby, is putting the best possible structures in place to actually get all of the information there and to push out all of the information out through databases or through data collection, etc., to be able to facilitate that process. But I can promise you the next best conditioning student coming out of Stellenbosch, UCT, 4D or whatever, thinks he knows better and he's got a better and a cleverer idea and how to condition players, and so for coaches as well. And you've all been in sport and you all understand coaches, and they are a bit stubborn sometimes. On the team selection, once again, I cannot reiterate the fact enough that we did select the best possible team. And we can go through individual players, but in the end, both the selectors and coach select players on what they base and deem is necessary for that specific game. And we look at different players. The fact that somebody is not even a first choice in his union, as you know, within the Blue Bulls, the Sharks, the Stormers, they employ far more than they actually need. And a lot of the time, that player, being the third best within his union, is probably the third best in the country as well. And that unfortunately happens. In terms of our respect to our SANSOL partners and our joint venture agreement, both Mr. Alexander and myself specifically negotiated that deal. We were very specific, and we had very big support from New Zealand in one clause, being that it will do our best endeavours to field the best available team at all times. The reason New Zealand did that is because they're sharing the same concerns as us. We go through a strenuous Super Rugby tournament, and then we go straight into a Tri Nations. They've got the same contracts as us. They've got the same player welfare issues, and they have to, like they just did on the weekend, and arrested four of their frontline players for the test against us. There was no disrespect for them. They're just doing welfare management. There was no disrespect for us to New Zealand. Hence, my honesty with them in our SANSOL meetings is these guys are being managed and they're injured, so we need to address that issue. So we've got no disrespect to both the agreement. We do understand it's the greater competition, but we also got to look after the welfare of South African rugby and the welfare of our players, and we're playing a lot of rugby within this competition. And these views we shared with our partners, and together we will look at a solution and how we can see if we can better that. We are partners when we sit around the table, but bear in mind we're also opponents. They're not there to do us any favors, and we're certainly not there to do them any favors. We've got to look after what is best for ourselves, but do that within a decent environment and in a committee, and we will always address it on that way. We are steering away from frightening the fight in the media that was previously done. We try to sit around the table and resolve our issues. Hence, the Super Rugby competition of the future is on the next agenda, and we've already addressed a number of issues on that. On the talent identification, We know better than anybody else that we're lacking in that area as such. Within our restructuring that we're actually launching that on Thursday, within that is a very big focus. Along with that, the Minister of Sports help on how we're going to get there. Only through broadening the game on each and every level in this country will we end up with having enough players to don the green and gold, but also to don the under 13B, the under 13C, under 6A, under 6B, and each and every age group and category. If we do not expand this game within our regions and in our schools, this game will die. It's got dwindling numbers as it is. We understand that. We have drawn up unbelievable plans. We've presented both to the Department of Sport and to the lottery, and we are waiting for their response on that. And if we do not get the positive response in that, in terms of the funding from that, which we're sure we will go somewhere else and look for that funding. But we do understand our role, and we do understand what we need to do to get there. And we're embarking on a number of projects on that, and we understand where we're going to go. Once again, we get back to a central database. We get back to the things that are all out there. We're just not utilizing. And hopefully under a unified and single structure, as SARU is now going to be, and a lot leaner and a lot more efficient, we will be able to actually address those issues. Within that, looking at those unions, which are deemed smaller unions and unions with less money, looking at very specific programs of academies in those areas, coincidentally one of the unions being named very specifically. We understand that. And part of the reason why we're doing that is we do not want the individual, and this is purely by example, we do not want the individual from Queenstown going to a region in the north or somewhere else. We want that talent to be kept within that region, to service that region, because what do we need? We need role models, we need mentors, we need somebody they can aspire to, but they need to aspire within their own union, and they need to inspire within their own province and go in that region. If they don't have the money, if they don't have the facilities nor the infrastructure, it's our responsibility to actually provide them with a framework for those infrastructures. And then we need to start working our transformation. But transformation is not only getting players of color on the pitch. Transformation is transforming the minds and the skills of each and every one of those individuals within that area. Because I'm on record on saying this, that we've been in this professional game and in this changed environment for the last 15 years. And we all speak about transformation, and we all speak about how we're going to get the players there. But nowhere ever have we actually gone and gone to the regions and said, what do we need to transform? If you don't transform somebody's mind, you can give them as much money as you can want. You can build 15 academies. You can give them all the kit they want. You can give them all the resources. If the individual sitting there is not transformed in his mind, you might as well leave your money. You're wasting your money. You need to transform that entity, everything that's in there. You need to transform their mind so that they believe in the money that you're giving them, what they're going to do with it, and they understand where they're going with it, and they understand the objectives and goals. If you not transform the human resource and the human capital within that environment, transformation will go nowhere. And we'll sit here next year, and the acting chairperson will blame me for this and tell me what have I done, and what has SA Rugby done yet again. And that being one of our biggest challenges there. When we talk about the emotion of the sport and what people think and what former Springbok think, we must also remember that whenever the Springboks lose, people are very emotional. It's always going to be like that. We actually love that, because the more they do that, the more we understand that they're passionate about our sport, they're passionate about the team. But we must also not get involved in an emotional roller coaster, because the same people will say we're the best thing on earth in 2 weeks' time after we've beaten both Australia and New Zealand, and our plans would be the best plans ever. Having said that, we do understand that whole environment. We're always going to be faced with challenges. We're always going to be faced with the challenge that when we're playing a Tri-Nations games overseas, all Currie Cup games are still going on. All schoolboy games are still going on. Everything is still going on. And we expect those parents to actually go watch their children play, because those are the Springboks of the future, and we want them out there. Hopefully, Honourable Acting Chairperson, they didn't go there not to watch the Springboks, but rather to watch their kids But I'm sure there are certain individuals that decided they were not going to watch after their performance against Australia, which wasn't a brilliant performance, and which I'll blame the coach for. Then on transformation, I did touch on it there, and it's one of the challenges, and it's one of my critical performance areas, which was given to me when I was appointed, and I have to draft the magic framework and plan to do that. As you can hear, I've got a complete different approach to this. I do not believe in actually buying a transformation. It'll not work. You need to transform. You properly need to transform. We've got a very separate committee working on that. I think we've got great plans. We're more than willing to share those plans with you, and hopefully you can tell us where you will go wrong and where you will go right. But throwing money at it is not going to help. Throwing kit and equipment at it is not going to help. If we don't control that structure, and if we don't address that issue hands on, and we leave it to other individuals, nothing is going to happen, and we're going to sit here again. And yes, we don't have say there, but we do have means and ways of manipulating the say that we don't have, and we need to address those issues. I think I've addressed all 16 things you've asked me, other than playing style and class versus form, performance of the team, and the selection itself, specifically around the sentiment. And coach, if I can pass the ball to you without a lot of skill.
Thank you, Theo.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. If you look at where rugby went from those playing days of most of the people who were concerned, the ex Springboks, I always say the older you get, the better your playing days become. Percent of tries in the last 3 years has been scored from the 10 yards to the try line, and only 6% tries has been scored through 6 and more phases by keeping the ball in hand. So if you keep the ball in hand in the wrong area of the game, you might stand a chance to give points away. So we do have a great kicking philosophy. Our execution is not always right on it, but everybody do understand it, and we don't always have the right people to execute it properly. If you look at New Zealand and Australia last year in Tri Nations, New Zealand kicked 20% more than us, and Australia kicked 15% more than us in the test, more than us. So they're also kicking the ball, and they also do understand where the modern game are going. We looked at previous World Cups, and we look at this World Cup, and we see New Zealand 9 o'clock at night with wet fields, keeping ball in hand from your own try line, going to be detrimental for the cause. So we don't think that it's going to be feasible not to have the best kicking game around. Look at 2007 World Cup, South Africa had the best kicking game, and they actually got into the right areas and they won the games from there. We look at the previous World Cup, we had the best lineouts, so our kicking game and kicking style can complement our lineouts. That is brilliant, but then again, we saw that in this year's competition that only 3% tries were scored of lineouts, and 20% tries were scored of scrums. So scrums became, again, more important. So our way of playing is to the strengths of South African and South Africans as a whole. We do have great rugby schools in this country, and if you watch their games on a Saturday and you see how they play and you see what has been instilled in the style of rugby they play, if you come and change it after they came to the franchises who instilled vastly the same style of play, then it's going to be detrimental to you because it's going to be a new thing for South Africans. If you look at the Stormers this year, the Stormers has been renowned as the best attacking team in the competition of the five franchises, bar the Cheetahs. You see how many times they really attacked, and how many times they scored off turnover ball, and how many times they scored off first base, and you can see that their emphasis were on defense, and that made them win their games. So, if you come with the style of defense of the Stormers, and you look at the style of defense of the Sharks and of the Blue Bulls, it's three different style of defenses, and they all have very much successes on the rugby field. But now we, in the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, have to get the guys together to go defend that same way that we want. So we have to bring them out of a environment that they don't understand really. They are new to each other, and with the older hands, who will take a week or two to understand each other again. We never had that luxury. After the World Cup, these guys that were thrashed this weekend will have to take our flag further. They do understand that the pace of the game that we also through our GPS system can determine is 30% more intense at international rugby than what it is at Super 15 rugby. It's 15% quicker, and if you look at what we do have, then these guys need to upskill themselves very, very quick. If we think that after this World Cup, rugby is going to end in this country, it won't. We still have to go ahead, and I think that this game will help us tremendous going forward for this game, seeing that almost 7 to 8 guys are going to retire after the World Cup. Murray Maxted came to South Africa, and he spoke to Ashley Johnson and told Ashley Johnson, I think you are better hooker than what you are flank forward. You will never become a Springbok as a flank forward, because in New Zealand we would have made you a hooker because of your build. And he showed you that he was one of the better players on the field on Saturday. So if you listen to Murray Maxted only, you might be lost. Some players will get preference before others. I don't think that every cricket team has been changed every week because a guy didn't score 100 runs. You know that he's a classy player, and you give him the chance at that level to become great. We've got international players at this moment in this country that we play down the drain at national level, and that is our biggest problem, that our international players are playing themselves into pieces for the franchises at national level. And when we have to go out there and exhibit our talents and the fact that we are the best rugby team in the world, we don't have the luxury to play him. Our best rugby player at the moment is Vuri Dupree. We never had the luxury to play him once in 2 years. And that is one of the problems that we do sit with. Andries Becker, I think he's a new rising star. He will be one of the best locks ever in world rugby. Now he can't play in an international game for this country because we used him every damn game in Super 15. So that's the kind of things that we do sit with. That we also have to. So the best team that we could select to go to the Tri Nations, we did. If we didn't pitch up there with any team, then I wouldn't have known the participation agreement. I do know the participation agreement. It's part of my job. I'm also very professional. Otherwise, my bosses would have got rid of me long time ago. So we do understand those things, and those are the things that actually keep us in the game, because we as South Africans, we respect it everywhere. The biggest fear in New Zealand wasn't the fact that we should lose. The biggest fear is that they should lose against a team like that, and where would they be? Luckily for them, they didn't. The scoreline wasn't very good. We never expected that. But then again, you can see that the defense were the ones that let us down. When we had the ball in hand, the way we played, that New Zealand team was nowhere on the field. There's really nowhere on the field. So if we can only get our defense structures going and it definitely will be much better going into the next test, I can assure you that. The preference of player, money that keep players that from EP, away from EP and from Boland, away from Boland, the same money is keeping the best players from South Africa away from South Africa too. It's a professional sport. We will have to deal with it. There's just no way that we can compete with money. If somebody has more money than you, they'll always they will always be better off than you. This committee to us which fall under government to me, if I'm wrong. I don't know. Some of the committee is under government. When you talk about government, we talk about this committee first, because to us this committee is the exit and entry to government, and we do understand that. Class and form, yeah, I need to say something about that. A classy player just needs that two games more to get back to his form. But a form player is that one guy that play one test for the South Africa or one game for his club and then they drop him a game. That's a form player. And when you need him most, he will never be able to stand up for you. The one thing about classy and form players, the players are not stupid. They understand that too. And when you get a form player in there and then next week the form player is gone, you might actually stir the cohesion of the team too. So, maybe that's the biggest challenge of a coach, to know when is the sell-by date gone and when is the class and form and those kind of things. But I think up till now we did really well about that. The fear for risk-taking, I'm not looking for excuses. I actually need a medal after this 4 years, and a big one too, because if you look at what we did with a team that are 6 months and being prepared in a different environment than what the Springboks are, and we take the team and in 2 weeks' time or 1 week time we have to gel them in the team again for international competition. I think we did really well as a coaching staff and supporting staff. We really did well. If you look how much I fight with the doctor to play certain players and I had to get him ready for the game, and the doctor's got medical ethics. My biggest fight with the doctor, with the guys that didn't go on tour, was, please, I need senior guys to help me direct the junior guys on the store. He said, if you go with the senior guys, you sign and let the player sign that I don't want to be part of this, because my professional medical background don't allow me to be part of this. So I can't now go out there and go against the guy that I pay a lot of money to give me that opinion, and then I say, I don't need your opinion anymore because I want to go win a game and break down the players then. The unity under the players, amongst the players, to me, I think being there, trying to create an environment for them to really flourish in. I think there will always be personal preferences, especially if you talk to some players that didn't play on the store. There will always be negative stuff. The guys who played, they always be positive. And that is my challenge, to keep everybody happy. A group of 30 players going to the World Cup and only 22 of them will actually play, or say 25, and 5 of them will never make their appearance in the World Cup. How do you keep them happy coming into a final and all those kind of things? So that is my challenge. And what I can assure you, that my country to me is more important than any individual, anything. When I got this job, I lost the Peter de Villiers that were out there, the rough diamond. I became a servant of my country. And to me, that is very, very important. After this 4 years, I'll go back to being Peter de Villiers again. But while I'm here, I'm going to do the job that's been expected of me, to take the flag that my union gave to me and to go unify the country. I mean, you go to Soweto, you see a little boy, he runs to you, he says, Coach, I want to play for you one day. Hell, then I feel very, very good, you know. So I think we managed to make this team the people's team. It was one of our objectives. And walking in the streets wherever I go, I felt so small when one of my people in Soweto took off his hat and said, Coach, I salute you. And you know, in that culture, if an elderly man takes his hat off, then they really salute you. So I think we've our honesty made it very, very easy for us to achieve what we wanted to achieve. The one great achievement now, and I can assure you today, that we will put through everything in it. We don't have any control over winning and losing, but I can tell you today, it's 90% sure that we can bring back that honors of the World Cup again. And then there's two losses of this 2 weeks that everybody will forget by next year. But for 4 years, we will remember who's the champions of the world, and that is very, very important for the unification of this country. And lastly, I must say that for me, this committee is very, very important, because this is our only chance to sit there and to hear what the fears really are and the concerns really are of the people at government level, and no country, no sport can survive without the backing of a government. And for us, it's really important to hear your concerns, to give you some feedback on how we try to run our stuff, but we'll never do it without putting our country first. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You know, there's such a lot to say, gentlemen, about your responses. Because it is not the first time that we prepare for a World Cup. It's not the first time that we've been involved in preparing for tri-nations and all those things. And we are not the only ones who are preparing. The Super 15, we are competing with New Zealand and Australia. They are playing the very same number of games which we are playing. Now, I don't know. We don't hear them having all these excuses. We must look. What have we done wrong in 2007? What have we kept? We had consultants there. Have we got new consultants? Have we changed these things? Because it's that each and every time we prepare for a transition or a World Cup, then we start afresh. And that I don't understand. The issue of the database, I'm happy that you're talking about that. Because it's a concern. I've been raising the issue of this under 19s and under 21s, which have won World Cups, and the most players of color in those under 19 and under 21s. Players of color have disappeared. But the white light is as they go up. And that's what I don't understand. And you, coach, you know, it's not the first time that I'm raising this issue. So, to me, there is something, it's not something wrong with the players. It's something wrong with our administration. And when we talk in terms of transformation, we don't talk in terms of 115 players of color. As you correctly said, Mr. Jury, that you need to transform the entire society. You need to transform those people to understand that they are players. If we are looking after the Eastern Cape players are playing for all provinces in South Africa. You just tell me a province where there's not a player of Eastern Province. You look of players of color who's representing Free State. You've got a Benjamin who comes from Western Province. You've got that center, that like what is training. The other day they shot four of them. Because they are not used by Western Province. And they go further. Now, what do SARU do about those things? For the past 3 weeks, SARS, your team, present, and Free State, 100% white on the team, on the player field. Huh? Now, are there no players there? Are there no schools? Are there no development happening there where they can develop their own players? And that's where SARU must come in. If you are not going to tell them this is a benchmark, they are not going to work towards that. And that can only happen if there's something which guides them. There's nothing which guides them. It's a free for all. Nobody can touch me. I'm untouchable here by constitution. And that's what the DA wanted to do in this province. We didn't allow them to do that. So, get your house in order. You know, last weekend, 20 black players out of 122 players
as a mother body, these unions supposed to account to you. And if they don't do what you want them to do, what punitive actions do you have? Because if you are not going to have those things in place, we are going to continue. And this thing is not going to change. Because you need to change those leaders' mindset that they have to work with the people. You know, the issue which has been raised by Mr. Suka, the Mandela Cup. You know, when you speak about that name, the whole world comes to a standstill. But if we South African rugby don't respect him, give him that respect, to send the best team to defend his name and say, here is your 93rd birthday present. We win it for you because you deserve it. It's because of you that we are back in international arena. We're isolated. It's Madiba who has made us to be accepted by the world. Now we don't treat him with the necessary respect. And we must do that. We must, all of us, do that. You know, somebody said that, but I think I've read in yesterday's newspapers that most of these players, 20-something of them, has been dropped, sent back to go duties for their provinces. I might be wrong, but there is a number of them. But I think, Coach, we need to try our best. We know that you say that the ultimate goal is the World Cup. But if we are not going to change gear now, I am telling you, we won't make it. We will be a laughing stock. We want South Africa to win. We don't want South Africa to lose. We want South Africa to win. South Africa has won the World Cup on foreign soil. And all these other countries were present there. We must go and defend this thing. Really. But we can only do that if we get our house in order. Mr. CEO, get the house in order. And I want to emphasize this issue of this constitution. You are not going to move. I am telling you, this has been coming from the time of Van Rooyen. It's your time now. Yes, Van Rooyen was president, was not CEO. But I'm saying to you, you'll have this outcry. And you must know that people can take so much, as I've seen in this in the Cape Times yesterday. They said about Vainan class and Vainan policies, ne? Enough is enough. Now, if the journalist says enough is enough, really then there's a problem with the person who has selected him. Because really, if you watch the centers who has been playing here, compared to the centers which has selected there, really, we don't want to be the selectors. But really, we also see what's happening. Can you go to the Eastern Cape franchise? Oh, sorry.
Chairperson, there's one point that I really want to make. And that is the point that was made by the CEO. He said that we went to the Department of Sport and Recreation and you put your case there. It was about development. It was about... The point that I really want to make, Chairperson, is the fact that most of these kids... It's talent identification and development. Most of these kids are at school. And And when you talk to the Department of Education, they tell you, listen, when it comes to kids at school, we're in charge of it. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that you must not only speak to us, the Department of Sport and Recreation, must also speak to the Department of Education. Because they also need to make a contribution. You know, I started my sporting sort of career. Where did we start? We started at school. And therefore, it's important for you to also touch base with the Department of Education.
No, Chairperson, for me it's not a new question. Rather than to say, I think there's an honorable member that raised the question around the remuneration and the contracting. Just to respond on that, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I just want to summarize and say that we don't want to debate the lead-up or the build-up to the World Cup anymore, except to say that we wish you well. And it's imperative that we bring back that cup. So good luck to all of you. But just on the issue of transformation, the Minister of Sport has been very, very clear on this issue. And he's made it a cornerstone of his ministry, is that transformation, and I agree with what the CEO says about minds over matter in this particular instance, but he's made a cornerstone of his ministry policy being that schools, as Donald has just said, school integration of sport, and we're talking about rugby here, is absolutely crucial. And so whatever that plan was that you guys have submitted to the Department of Sport or about to submit, I think it's very important that we see it so we can help drive that process, because I'm telling you, we have to integrate into the schools urgently, as a matter of urgency. That's the way forward. I think the Minister has made his point clear on quotas and various other ways and mechanisms that we've looked at. Nothing seems to have worked to the satisfaction of all. So I think the school initiative is massive. So I agree with what Donald's saying and the Minister. So let's get that plan ASAP. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Through you. My apologies. I did look up after and saw in his eyes. I didn't answer him, so I don't remember. We've got normal contracts like any other employee-employee contract, which will have very specific clauses on actually how to handle that. And we would go back to the normal arbitration negotiation, etc. And in the very end, I mean, we would end up at labour court should there be something drastically wrong. We've got SARPA, which is the players' union as such. They're now actually a member of our board. So completely informed on where we are and how we deal, that represent both those players there. We've actually got membership on their board as well. Very difficult to negotiate with a union when they actually know all your financials up front and your budget and actually know what you've budgeted for them. But on the strike situation, as we've currently got like in the NFL in America, where it's a major issue, should that ever happen, that is a point in case, and you can put all the contingencies in place. If players decide to strike, they will always do, and you will have to address that through the proper forums. Those are engaged in the contracts. Although I would love to see a Springbok team strike with the emotion there is with them losing. Imagine them saying they're not going to play a game of rugby for the country. That will be the end of that. On the plan itself, on transformation, on the schools initiative and the academies, etc., very much so. But once again, we're faced with a challenge that, and I'm not throwing stones, but formally, it's no use saying, listen, I'm going to reach 1,000 schools now. It's whether those 1,000 schools are playing rugby the next year and the year after that, and whether you've actually got the human capital to develop it, because you can drop 10 tackle bags, 4 pieces of kit, and somebody there for 5 days. If you don't train the trainer, if you don't educate the educator and leave him behind so that he's capable of actually going on with that work, you are wasting your money. The last thing you can do is a Saturday T-shirt hot dog and coke show. You don't have to. Going out into a township, although a massive experience for each and every individual kid that is there, on having a day away from home and an open field, being trained skills and giving the opportunity just to interact with other players and play, is a unique thing. But it's one day. There's 364 days in that year left, and there's a lifetime of sport and achievement left. And if you don't do that on that basis and throughout that process, you'll get nowhere, and you might as well take that money and just buy the players you want.
Yeah, I think some of my questions will be answered after this Eastern Cape thing. Can we go to the Kings thing?
Chairperson, can I just ask that the coach be relieved, released, because he has to catch a plane to go to another function in Johannesburg?
No, thank you.
Thank you. He's going to Rustenburg to rehab.
Just communicate clearly, please. You know, at times we wouldn't be answering these questions if the communication is clear. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. On the Southern Kings, which is the name of the franchise and not the Spears. Chairperson, before I start with the presentation, I just want to talk about some of the shortfalls we had the last time around. You know, the organization, the Kings, was, the Spears was formed with no formal structures that were in place. You know, there was no cooperation agreement between the three provinces. There were a lot of infighting. This time around, the process took a little bit longer. We had to first stabilize the region. We stabilized the Eastern Cape, Port Elizabeth. We seem to have stabilized the border now, and we just about finalizing Southwestern District. So as we speak, we have an agreement between the three of them on the way forward. There's a signed agreement. I'll give you a copy, Chairperson, of that agreement. So what we've done we formed this in 2009 after there was a decision made to include the Kings again. SARA formed in 2009 and 2010 funded that process. So the Kings were funded from that point onwards. We also had the Kings participating in the Nations Cup earlier in this year. The makeup of the Kings will participate. It was a decision we made in 2013. So there will be, the Kings will play in 2013. Whether we have five franchises or six, that we still negotiate with Sansa, but the Kings will participate in 2013. The owners of the Kings is the Eastern Province Rugby Union, the Border Rugby Union, Southwestern Districts Rugby Union, and South African Rugby Union. We've taken a stake in the Kings because we want to guide the process to ensure that it does succeed this time around, and to cut out the infighting of who's the boss. So we're participating in the franchise. The Kings will play out of the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro because there's a special requirement within the SANSA ruling about the quality of the stadium. So they will play out of the new stadium in Port Elizabeth. The parties have signed an agreement. There's a copy of the agreement that will be given to the chairperson. You can see the agreement has been signed, and we're happy that at last we've got to agreement with the parties concerned. Our vision is to build and entrench the Southern Kings as the flagship professional rugby in the Eastern Cape. You know, one understands the Eastern Cape. That was the bedrock of black rugby in the old SARO. So the biggest, strongest population of so-called players of color is based in the Eastern Cape. So it's a concerted effort on behalf of South African rugby. The one thing we wanted to make sure that the organization is sustainable, is growing, it's viable, and the community is participating. And I'll talk a little bit later about the projects around that. Our mission, we want to provide entertaining rugby, sustainable rugby, and that region hasn't been sustainable for a very long time. We want to have competitive rugby, and we want to get a return on investment for the stakeholders. The stakeholders are the people in the region, the sponsors, and possibly an equity partner. So it must be sustainable. For too long, the Eastern Cape, I think it was over six years, they were running in the red. So we turned that around. The organization's running far better, both in border and in Eastern Province. We're busy with turning around the Southwestern Districts.
The whole objective of this franchise is to develop and nurture club, school rugby and this institute. So you'll see a little later when we talk about the academy. It's around keeping the talent within the region. Our objective is to keep the people, the players of Eastern Cape in the region. If one looks at, we spoke earlier about transformation, and if one looks at the Craven League, there are lots of players of colour playing there. You see them playing there, but one of the big issues we have, the players just cannot make the step up. Purely from a nutrition point of view, they live there. There's, some guys go to school without even having food, and the other one is from a sports science support. Now the academies we'll talk about later will provide that and assist some of the areas for transformation, especially the areas where we've got the biggest concentration of so-called players of colour. The idea of the academy is to retain the players in the region. We're targeting kids leaving school, and we want to give them contracts so they can remain in the region. That the one project is the one with the academies, and we are working with another project with the SADNF to create jobs for kids in the area, so the kids can, the SADNF can have a better intake, a better quality intake of so-called soldier, but also to reintroduce rugby back into the SADNF. This will create opportunities. If one looks at how EP and the others operated, the players got paid very little bit of money compared to the Bulls and the others. So we want to establish a professional player base, giving them career opportunities. We want them to stay in the Eastern Cape. The reason why the guys leave the Eastern Cape, there are no opportunities, there are no proper structures in place. And so the kids have to go where the money is. Like most people do, you follow the money, you don't, you know, loyalty then falls out of the window. So we want to create this thing with our academy so the kids have quality coaching, they have quality training, they've got access to all the sports science stuff, and they can play in a professional rugby team. Again, creating value for our stakeholders, Chairperson. I want to whisk over the next couple of slides. It's in your documents, and I'd rather don't want to focus on these because they are there, the priorities. I want to go to the academies and focus on the academies more. The objective of the academies is to identify players leaving school. We've got a lot of kids who leave school, 18 to 21, and if they want to further the rugby, they have to leave the region. They either have to go play in the Bulls, the Sharks, or one of the bigger unions. So the idea of this academy is to keep the boy there, to give him the necessary training, put him in a facility where we can give him life skills, where he's got further education opportunities. So the idea of the academy is not to lose the boys to them. There'll be boys between from 25 to 45 athletes going there. And the idea of these athletes is to contract them for 2 years. So when the youngster finishes his training, he's not off to the Bulls. He will have to stay in the region for 2 years in order to sustain the franchise we have. Again, developing rugby skills, we're utilizing the best coaches in the region. There will be programs. I think the program that will be delivered in Border will be exactly the same one delivered in Port Elizabeth, in Southwestern districts and in Boland. So the programs will be standardized. The services they will get, it will be the same quality service. It will be managed from a head office approach. So it will be driven by SARO. It will be managed by SARO. But what we're doing, we're transferring skills into the local communities. We're training the physios there. We're training the doctors. We're using the access of the universities. But the quality of the program, the quality of the service delivery will be managed from a central point. Nutrition and supplements. Our youngsters who come from the Eastern Cape and the regions we just mentioned don't have access to that. They are the normal thing, run on the field and go home. They don't have access to gyms. They don't have access to sports science support. This academies will give them access to that. We will make sure that every kid from the age of from the under 15s till the play senior rugby will have access. The guys with the talent will have access to sports science. They will have access to the necessary support. We will also give them a system to get other tertiary institute education. We'll assist them with further education. There are programs in place. We're going to be teaching the teachers. We're going to be teaching the trainers in the regions all out of this program. So this program doesn't only
focus on the boys, it focuses on the people delivering the programs in the township. We spoke earlier about the government and mass participation. We are tapping into that mass participation. I think the question came out the last time at the funding, the budget proposal. We are. We've got workshops with the minister planned, and we will be tapping into that to making sure that we train the trainers. Not only why we train the trainers, we want to bring more volunteers into the system. And the teachers, I have access. The teachers are an educated, basically, they know how to deal with people. So we're trying to keep as many teachers in the system as possible, and athletes from school level, linking schools to clubs. So I'm going to take you through. I want to get to this. Chairperson, so this is what the academy looks like. We'll be housing between 45 and 60 boys from under 18 to under 21. They'll be housed in a central facility. They will be given food. They will be given a stipend. They will have access to physiotherapists. They will have access to sports scientists. They'll have access to the best coaching possible. But also, we are employing coaches in that region so we can transfer the skills to those coaches in the region. So the coach will remain there. That coach would normally be the adequate coach of that province. And the four provinces, chairperson, it will be in Port Elizabeth, East London, South Western Districts, and in Borland. Now, over and above that is a program we're working with the SADF, will complement this program. Where the SADF will be taking intakes in January, that will do 6 months basic training, but also be trained in rugby, and the same services we're providing here, we provide for the SADF, also to reintroduce rugby into the army, giving them a better intake of candidates coming into the military. So that's the idea. If one looks at the slide. We got part-time people coming in, where people come in and get out, but we also have full-time people employed to deliver the service. We're not talking about brick and mortar. We're utilizing facilities in those regions that are currently there, or we're doing paying rent and we're utilizing the gyms. So we'll equip every region with a proper gym and consulting rooms for the sports scientists to come in and out. And at the end of the day, the objective is that we've now transferred those skills into the local coaches. The people in the region will have the skills when we move out of the project. And this project has been funded by lottery, and it will be monitored by the Department of Sport and SA Rugby. So it's a joint venture between the ministry and SARO. If one looks at the overview, we're talking again from the under 16s all the way up to senior team. Some is part time, some is full time, but that's the idea. We want to cover that whole range of kids. We didn't go lower because we believe kids under the age of 13 should be playing rugby for fun. There must be no pressure. There must be no supplements. They must go and have fun. Everybody wins and everybody wears a naughty badge. But when you go a little higher, you start moving into a different sphere. And the kids, we're trying to retain the kids in the game. We lose a lot of kids from under 18 to 21. Why? They don't have opportunities. The Eastern Cape, or if one looks at the Eastern Cape boys in particular, most of those boys who play in the Currie Cup system, and you look at the Craven League, they're scoring, all the boys are scoring tries, but they just can't make their step up from a physical point of view. You know, come guys are hungry, you know, they're not eating regularly, so we're going to give them the nutrition. We're going to make sure that these boys are raised to another level. You know, we're utilizing the academy heads of all the top academies. We'll be consulting into this thing so we can make sure they're getting the same service as the Bulls, the Sharks, and everybody else who has academies out there. If one looks at the model, and, you know, we're looking from grassroots all the way up till Super Rugby and becoming Springboks. But this region has produced a lot of players, as the chairman said. There's about 48 of them playing in Currie Cup and Super Rugby around the provinces currently. So, you know, this area is rich with players of color, and they don't have to look for them, they're there. But this program is also not targeted only at players of color. It's targeted for the youngsters who have not. It's for the have-nots, and we've also done a big injustice over time to the kids who don't have access to this. And so 80% of this will be for kids of color, and the 20% will be for those or come from a poor background. In conclusion, what are we trying to achieve? We're trying to increase the number of effective volunteers supporting the game of rugby. And that is by the training of the referees, the administrators, teach them how to administer the game. We're linking up with CETA to provide the programs in the region, so the CETA is on board with us. So just not coaching of rugby, it's empowering the region to run the game. If one looks at the administrators that have come through over years, there are no administrators coming through. If one looks at the quality of the administrators in the region, there are just no, most of those administrators from the region are now in government. So we don't have them anymore. So we need to develop a new set of administrators. We need to get more referees in the system. If one looks at the number of women teams playing board alone, there's 150 women teams. So that region is rich with talent. We just have to untap that talent in the region. We want to link schools and clubs because a lot of clubs are dying. The only reason they're dying, they're not linked to clubs. And if you link them to schools, the club brings the technical resources and the school brings the player resources. So we need to link schools and clubs in order for us to survive in these regions. We want players to have suitable qualified coaches coaching them. It will give them a positive playing experience. You know, currently most of the youngsters know more than the teacher helping them. We want to empower that teacher to deliver good service. He must be a BoxSmart accredited. He must have a qualification, a coaching for qualification. So when a kid goes out there, he's got the best service possible to help him develop as an athlete. Again, the retention of players from under 16 to under 21, that's the biggest loss we have. We lose players from under 16 to 21. Some parents say that education comes first, but there are a lot who just cannot afford to play the game. There are a lot who cannot make that step up because they don't have access to stuff with the step up. We want to link the education. We've got universities there. We're not utilizing the universities. The government gives them every year grants. I think it's $8 million to each of the universities. We need to tap into that. We need to work with the expertise in the universities. We need to make sure that the universities, the clubs, and the schools are working in tandem. They're part of that development continuum, and we don't work that currently. Having a successful team there will create the heroes of tomorrow. It'll get the Eastern Cape back to where it used to be. You know, I played in the old Saro, and if one talks about the Eastern Cape, you know, that's where rugby was. All the top teams came from Eastern Cape, other than the Western Cape from time to time on a competition or two. But the Eastern Cape was tops. And so we need to put a lot of effort into that region. Firstly, from a socio-economic point of view, the region suffering. We want to make sure our kids are not suffering. We want to make sure the kids are coming through the system. Chairperson, that's the Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Deputy President. Sir, it's open. If it's clear, say it's clear. You don't have to say anything if it's clear. No. I'm still. But let me give over to Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable Lee, Mohens. I don't want people to get point up. Honorable Van der Linde, Maglu, it's clear. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mark, I just want to say a good presentation. I just would like to talk about the academies first and then the Super Rugby issue. On the academies, you've got four provincial regions. How many academies are you proposing to have? You mentioned that you're going to have an intake of 45 per year. Is that in each academy if there's more than one? Because in your third year, then that one academy would be up to, if my math is right, probably about 135 students, assuming that they will stay. One of the greatest challenges you're going to have is that some of the major unions today are contracting schoolboys at under 16 level. So before you even get to your under 18 guys, they're already trying to take some players. So I think that's a major challenge. can I urge you in the academies that in your curriculum, and I think this is very important for the growth and development of rugby, is that part of the curriculum, which is the social cohesion part, is that they need, as part of their academic studies and BRAC, they need to go out into the townships and previously disadvantaged. These are the students at the academies. And they need to go and interact in those schools or in those clubs or those community workshops, whatever, and coach coaches or coach kids in those areas, because they would be the best equipped to do that. And it's a great resource for them, and it's a great skills development for them as individuals as well. I want to get on to something a little bit controversial. We talk about, okay, so that's in the academies, and I think academies are great, and I think you have 100% support in that. What I want to talk about now is something maybe a little bit controversial. Your opening comment here says, your opening comment says that an Eastern Cape franchise committed to playing professional Sanzar Super Rugby Series from 2013. Who took that decision that the Kings would play Super Rugby in 2013? Where in Super Rugby, because I haven't come across any documentation that I'm aware of, where there's been a decision at some level to have EP Kings. I know it's been spoken about a lot, but is there an official decision that by the President's Council or whatever, because I'm not aware of any, that rugby would be played? The other question is, assuming the Kings go in, is it just for a year? Because if they come bottom, is there a relegation promotion playoff? Because whoever loses out, assuming that Sanzar doesn't increase the number of teams in Super Rugby, which at this stage it doesn't appear that they want to, from what I gather, that region is going to die. So if it's Free State, which is one of our greatest nurseries, that could die, or if it's the Lions or Sharks, whatever. So if you could get back to me on that, because I think that agreement on Super Rugby for the Kings, I don't have any evidence of that anywhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. In your document, Mark, you should really add, as one of your strategic partners, the Defence Force, because that is not mentioned as one of your partners here. That's the first point. Chairperson, as a man from Port Elizabeth, in the past I didn't support them. I didn't support the fact that they should have a franchise, sort of. And the reason being, and you know it, that one, they didn't even speak to one another. I'm talking about the three regions there. And that the administration was not up to much. Because I didn't want them to embarrass us, that is why. And I'm glad to hear now that at least they are talking to one another, and at least there is an agreement. To me, that is a great, and thank you for what you are doing. You know, it was that buck was passed to you, and thanks for having brought sense into them, or having, you know, you talk some sense into their heads. Now, about academies and about talent and about talent identification, Chairperson, you know, there are schools with a history of rugby. If you talk rugby in South Africa and rugby schools, then you talk about Grey College, you talk about in the Eastern Cape, there are many schools with that. You know, they have the name for nurturing that talent. And I know that it is the ideal to coach these kids at their school, in their environment. But look at Ntini. He had to be taken out of his environment into a school with a cricketing history, and he was then developed there. The talent was identified, and he was taken somewhere else in that region to be developed. You understand? It's for that reason, the reason why I'm saying these things to you, it reminds me, I was a headmaster of a school for a few years. And I had a kid at my school, I had many talented kids at my school, sporting talent. And I had the choice to, or the parents really had the choice to send a certain kid with tremendous sporting talent to just another school. And I had to advise them, and I had to get a bursary for them.
to get that child into a school with a history of sporting achievement, sporting excellence. You know, I was so proud. He went there as a cricketing child, a child with brilliant cricket talents. He played Eastern Province cricket, yes, school's cricket. But it was so good for me to look on the TV and see that child in the Eastern Province Nuffield team, the rugby team. In other words, he had brilliant talent. He just had to get into an area where he could really be developed. And he was given a bursary to attend that school. And that is why I'm saying that if we identify the talent, we must think of, because we don't have all those facilities now, to send these talented kids to schools where they have a history of developing and nurturing the sporting talent of our kids. You understand? If Mkhitini didn't go to the school where he went, he would never have been the Mkhitini that he is today. I can really say it. And I mean, I hope you understand that. And I think you will agree. So I think what is important is to get these kids to schools with, because at the moment there is a vacuum. They can't really be developed. And I think that is an area. The academy is a brilliant idea. And perhaps we must talk about that. Chairperson, you must set a day aside to talk about sports development in this country. And therefore, at that juncture, really, we can talk about academies and how to do it. Really, I'm impressed by at least we are thinking now of developing our children. You know, and then they can get into teams on merit, because at the end of the day, I believe the best man or woman must get there. But we must also give them the best opportunity to develop. Thanks.
Honorable Van der Linde?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lee has touched on a lot, and Mr. McKenzie, to me it's just this academy in the four regions, which coincide with, from SARU, legislation that players can't be bought until a certain age. Because it's no use that player goes to the academy 16 years, 17 years, 2 years expire, and he's gone again to the Bulls. Actually, SARU must compel the Bulls and the Lions and the Cheetahs to have their own, to bring up their own players. Otherwise, the academies or the rugby in the Eastern Cape won't really come to the fore, because money is the main thing. Actually, there must be the stipend in the academies around the world, around the country, must actually be more or less the same. Otherwise, you're still going to get that kid being bought by the Bulls, being bought by the Lions, being bought by the Sharks. So to me, that's, otherwise I'm happy with what I'm hearing, because previously we've spoken about what happens to our players of your rural areas and so on. With this academy in the region, it will be a great help. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you, Deputy.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Chairperson. The one question for Graham, there will be 45 athletes per academy. I would take your point about having the athletes coaching in the community. It's a good idea, and we look at that. But with the athletes who have been trained, transfer those skills to schools and clubs in the community. That's a good point. Thank you. As far as the decision about 2013, that was agreed at the General Council meeting. They have agreed to the Kings playing in 2013. Now, we're currently negotiating with SANZA to increase the number of teams to 16 teams, playing one round, that's 15 games,
one plays four, two plays three. That also helps us with player management. We reduce the number of games we currently play. So we've put in a plea to our partners out there. They never said no yet. Failing that, unfortunately, one team will have to drop out, and we will try and find a alternative competition for them to stay competitive until the next year for them to compete, to come up again. But that is our first prize. We are trying for 60 teams. We met with the Australians, and they've never said no. We understood. We also made it quite clear to them that if we cannot find a solution going forward, we have to look at other competitions so that we can cater for all our South Africans. You know, that's our first prize. But we believe we'll find a solution within SANZA, and we'll work with SANZA to find a solution. We're also looking at player management, the number of games. I know we alluded to this players playing so many games earlier. Was there any other questions I missed? Chairperson, is there any other
questions? I think just on the legislation, having said that, I mean, it's music to my ears, and you've got a model in America called the NCAA model where the rules are very strict. That's part of their culture, and it's been there all along, and they're very strict. And then, in many ways, the Varsity Cup that is currently being played is modelled on that NCAA model. Excuse the duplication, but in the end, we're going to be faced with severe challenges on that. You know, rugby is a unique thing, and when we put a cap in on amateur players not being able to be paid more than 300 rand per game. They were duly paid 300 rand per game, but they were living in houses for free. They got a car for free. They could throw petrol in at a certain garage. They could go shop at a certain shop and go eat meals at a different shop, and people will always find ways around it. I think what we do need is a general buy-in on how we're going to approach ourselves, how we're going to conduct ourselves. But money is a terrible thing, and once there's money involved and you're in a professional game, hence our struggle to keep our players out of Europe and out of the United Kingdom. We cannot compete with a euro and a pound, and it's always going to be difficult. But there we're talking about transformation as well. Transformation, the way people think and how they're doing it, getting them to actually put up their own academies, their own talent identification, and conduct themselves in a way that is proper and decent, and really going in their own regions and developing their own individual talent. But this is unfortunately throughout our system. The boys from Great College, more than half of them are not from the Free State. The guys from Paul Gym, and then so I can go on, even Eitenhaag, and wherever you go, they're normally not from that area, and they're from different areas. Tradition, culture, father's choices, and unfortunately money play a big role. And that touches basically on what the acting chair is keep on challenging me as well on, is the constitution, and that somehow we need to look at what we're doing, how we're doing it, and see how we can get inroads and how we can have a say in what is being done on another level, and that being a big challenge, because in the end these same individuals have got to vote for those changes in the constitution. And it's like asking me whether I want to pay a fine. I do accept the challenge. I will not steer away from any of those challenges, and I will surely take those words, and we need to address that. It's something that we as SARA need to address, but I have to say we will face a very big challenge in actually bringing out any of those, which we can only bring out as the rules and regulations and bylaws. Legislation itself not being in our hand, unless you as a committee have got enough influence in the government to actually get us to get that legislation through. But I accept that, as I do accept that we need to change certain things, and if we don't change it, we will be busy with a futile exercise, Acting Chair.
Thank you, Deputy President. You've done some work on this matter. You know, I can't even ask the questions which I've prepared for you. But the one issue is the
commitment which was made to this parliament in 2008 that in 2013 this franchise will participate. And we want that to be honored. By all means, if there is a franchise which needs to be relegated, so it be. So it be. But there is no way that we can turn back on that commitment. You see, CEO, before 94, many of us did not believe that we will be sitting here with all those challenges. We managed to come together and we talk, and here we sit. You see, the question which I'm asking about these provincial teams, if SARU is going to sit back and do nothing, it's going to continue. No, it's not everybody who is going to be happy. But you can't have the majority of the people of this country unhappy to make a few happy. That is not fair. That is why we said lead rugby. And when you are a leader, you must lead when it's sweet, you must lead when it's bitter. You must be in a position to take the bad news and go and say, these are the news and this must happen and this will happen. Should this not happen, these are the punitive measures. And it is time for SARU to do that. Because we are going to ask you, you are the people who are responsible for rugby in South Africa. Anything which goes wrong with rugby in South Africa, you must account to South Africa. Why? Make the country proud as you made it proud in 1995 when you united South Africa. We can do that, but it needs fearless leaders. You must be in a position to stand up against those presidents and tell them this is what the country thinks should happen. You know, I was invited to Bolland Athletics some time ago last year. When I arrived there, it was the boys' choir, the leadership. There were no females, there were no Africans. And I asked them, are there no females in this region? Are there no Africans? If you can't find them, I'll find them for you. There were just a few aunties who were sitting there. They were clapping hands. When I went to a second meeting, there was a change. Because if we don't say this, people don't like to hear these things, but we need to say that to them. And I know I'm one of those people who are not being liked because of this, what I'm saying. I don't want to be invited to a suite. You think that you are going to silence me? No. I've got my TV at home. I'll watch there. There's no roadblocks. There's only my wife's chairs which can broke, and then I will fix them. And that is it. So we expect you, CEO, to go and make these changes. To go and say that this constitution needs to be changed. And you must tell them. Somebody was saying here, in the Western Cape, we've got the most colored clubs, but you don't see that represented there. We are complaining that the people of the Western Cape are supporting this team from New Zealand. Because they see the people of their color. And they want to sit here. They'll only change when they see this happen and there is potential in this province. And as Mr. van der Linde said, we can have these things, but if we are not going to retain these players in the Eastern Cape, this is only also going to be a fruitless exercise. And you must communicate what is happening about this franchise so that the people of this Eastern Cape, Boland, Southwestern District border knows what is happening around this issue. So that they can see at least the light is still there. It just needs more electricity. But you must get there. We can't blame players. The players are not selecting themselves, they are being selected. The selectors must do their work properly. And they must also account to you and say what is happening. So I hope that you're not going to take that you've been called here to be lambasted. We are concerned. We support South African Rugby Union and want them to go forward. But please correct the things which need to be corrected. Deal with them. Be unpopular. If they don't share beer with you, don't cry. Buy your own beer because you are being paid. So, on that note, let us close this meeting. Thank you for coming. Thank you for the presentation. And thank you for everything. And I hope that you'll take this with a very good spirit. This was not a fight. It was a concern raised by South African public representatives. Please, on that note. But members, can you just stay behind for a minute so that we can look at in-house things? You are excused. Thank you so much.
Chairperson, thank you for listening to us.